CNBC's Big January continues with the JPM Healthcare Conference, the Amex Golf Tournament, Inauguration Day, and the World Economic Forum in Davos. Get ahead of the game. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
All right, Rockets lose last night to the Miami Heat. Take that music down a little bit, Jordan. That's a little bit loud. Rockets lose to the Miami Heat last night. That was the big story locally. This was another game, 104-100, the final score. The game played kind of in the mid-90s for most of the fourth quarter, and then a lot of technical fouls and free throws at the end of the game because there was a fight.
Yeah.
There was a fight at the end of this game. The Rockets blew a double-digit lead in the second half, and the Heat were up 4 points with under a minute to go in the game, and the Rockets are trying to inbound the ball. And Fred VanVleet gets called for a five-second violation when he was clearly signaling for a timeout before 5 seconds, I thought. And yeah, so did the announcers on the game, Craig Ackerman and Ryan Hollins.
Udoka certainly thought
so. Udoka thought so. VanVleet thought so, enough to where he got teed up and got kicked out of the game. Udoka eventually got kicked out of the game as well because on one of the ensuing inbounds plays, with, you know, 20 seconds to go or so, something like that, Amen Thompson and Tyler Hero of the Heat got into it with each other, grabbing each other's jerseys, and then eventually Amen Thompson tossed Tyler Hero to the ground, like pretty hard.
Yeah, pretty hard.
Amen Thompson gets kicked out. Ime Udoka gets kicked out. There's a whole big kerfuffle out there. No punches were thrown, but I'm guessing that Amen Thompson will probably get a suspension of some sort, maybe a game, something like that. There'll be a lot of fines. A lot of charities are going to get some money this week. Here was Ime Udoka after the game on his view of what happened between Thompson and Hero.
I didn't see it live, but I rewatched it, and they were in each other's face, bumping chest a little bit, and one guy stronger than the other.
One guy's stronger than the other. I hadn't caught that the first time.
Yeah, that was good. That was good. Here was Tyler Hero's version of what happened.
I guess that's what happens when someone's scoring, throwing dimes, doing the whole thing. So I get mad too.
Okay. He's allowed to do that. His team won, and Tyler Hero was outstanding last night. He scored 27 points. Nine assists in the game. He had a really good game.
It also helped, you know, that the Rockets missed 11 straight shots as part of squandering that lead.
No doubt.
So the fact that it was Amen Thompson, I feel really good about, just because it's not like this is some fake tough guy thing out of him.
No, he's legit.
He's been a scrappy, awesome defender all year long.
Yeah.
And you know, he admitted that there was frustration mounted the way the game was going, and then however heated they were after Fred VanVleet's injustice that he suffered, it was contentious. Look, we know that this team can be scrappy. We know they play good defense. So it's not like all of a sudden I think, oh, look, okay, now they're a real tough team. I think it's more of a highlight. Yeah, a lot of the frustration was mounting because, yet again, they cannot shoot. The shooting of the basketball, kind of an issue in modern basketball,
it is funny.
I found.
You and I have talked a lot about the parallels between the Rockets and the Texans throughout really the whole trajectory of the rebuild. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like from the time that Deshaun Watson and James Harden requested trades within days of each other, the trajectory of both of these franchises have been very, very similar in terms of they both bottom out, they both bring in coaches that we know you can feel are short-timers before you find the culture setter in Ime Udoka or D'Amico Ryans. And I would say the analogy continues to hold up to this very day, given the fact that the thing that seems to fail these two teams, both good teams by definition, right? They would be, you know, the Rockets would be a high-level playoff team right now if the season ended today. The Texans are a playoff team, and they won their division. So by definition, I know people don't want to hear that about the Texans right now because of how Wednesday
looked. They're in the playoffs. They're nine and seven.
Yeah. Like, they're not a bad football team. It's similar with the Rockets. And similarly, it's the offense that's failing both of them. You have zero concerns over the dog level of the defensive portions of these teams. And I don't have a concern with the Rockets' dog level overall. I have a major concern with the Texans' dog or swarm level, as we'll call it, with the Texans on the offensive side of the football.
Boy, you talk about the lame duck coaches, too. as far as just the temperament of them. Where like Lovie Smith is a Lovie Smith. I don't like I got no issues with that. Like he would have been a perfect bridge coach, but the David Culley and Steven Silas both. They're gentlemen, I think, it wasn't quite the feel of what you wanted out of your football team.
No.
And, or football or basketball team. So with D'Amico, the thought I had as I was listening to an article about the Jets debacle was, man, I wonder if D'Amico in his transition to becoming a head coach would be a lot easier, like a genuine head coach where he's not the defensive coordinator and the head coach, but just the overall head coach. Robert Saleh would be an awesome defensive coordinator to have. And I like Matt Burke. I think he and D'Amico work really well together. Yeah. But D'Amico might just trust Robert Saleh more because of the common ground and shared experiences and everything. And Robert Saleh is a hell of a defensive coordinator. So that's something to monitor a couple weeks from now.
I think
maybe.
So, too. I think that's second behind the offensive side of the ball is, yeah, should D'Amico Ryans be more of a CEO? You know, should he have less hands-on play-to-play with the defense?
Yeah. And I don't think Robert Saleh is going to get a head coaching opportunity real quick. And it's a shame because none of the Aaron Rodgers or quarterback stuff in general was his fault at all. And yet, I think he lost a lot of his shine as a head coach just because it was such a debacle and a mess the entire time.
Yeah, it sucks. If your team doesn't get the quarterback situation right, it's going to reflect poorly on your record. Speaking of the NFL, playoff picture coming into focus. The Colts are out. They lost to the Giants yesterday, so they are out of the playoffs. The Chargers clinched a spot on Saturday against New England, and there is, according to the computers, a 20% chance that the Texans could see the Chargers in the first round of the playoffs. The heavy favorite right now is that it'll be the Steelers coming to town. We talked about this a little bit in the open, but the preference, the Payne and Pendergast preference seems to be, at least in terms of matching up with rosters, the Steelers would be, you know, just based purely on Russell Wilson versus Justin Herbert,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Russell Wilson versus Justin Herbert. I think the Steelers' defense would probably present more issues than the Chargers' defense. But you also brought up the great point of, man, if it's the Steelers, it's going to be half Steelers in that crowd.
Yeah, for sure.
And it may be more because of the way people feel about the team right now. Mm-hmm. And Steelers fans travel. They don't just travel well. They are everywhere.
They're everywhere.
There's probably at least 500,000 Steelers fans in the state of Texas.
Yeah, in the state of Texas.
I don't know
Texas,
what the percentage maybe. Would be. But, yeah, so they come. And definitely in the entire region. So, boy, if you actually want to have a genuine home field advantage, it almost needs to be the Chargers. The Ravens, I think you get the home field advantage. I have no interest in seeing the Ravens.
There's a five, and for the reason Seth's bringing up the Ravens, there's a 5% chance they play. It's going to be one of those three teams.
Yeah.
Heavy favorite is the Steelers to be the team they play. Next would be the Chargers, the Ravens. The Ravens would have to lose to the Browns.
That's where I've flipped, by the way, Sean. I had been saying before that, man, depending on the situation, yeah, rest your guys versus Tennessee because that's a classic, okay, last game, meaningless, you get ready. That makes sense, rest some guys.
Sure.
If it's a meaningless game. But I had been saying, well, no, I'd rather face the Ravens at home if I want to make a playoff push because that's your best chance at beating the Ravens. I've abandoned all hope of that at this point, and I'm just saying, all right, no, I'd like, okay, let's get at least a victory. You got to do something. I don't need to see the Ravens at home. I don't need to see the Ravens again. Please.
At all. Yeah.
Please, baby Jesus, no.
Yes.
Just keep them away from me as long as possible.
Want nothing to do with them. 15 Hall of Fame finalists have been named. The class of 2025 will be announced. It's a five-man modern era class, and it includes, you know, and then they'll add on a coach and a contributor and things like that. So five of the 15 finalists will end up being Hall of Famers. The big names on the list, Eli Manning is the headliner in terms of name value. Seth has a former teammate on this list, not from the Texans, but from Jacksonville. Fred Taylor makes final 15, Seth.
I'm not optimistic that he's going to make it just because he's a compiler. People view him as a compiler. He had some brilliant seasons, but without being on a high profile team and without having won a Super Bowl, they don't tend to reward the compilers to the same way they might somebody else from a more dominant team.
No, and they in recent years they've been very friendly to guys who are the opposite of a compiler, like a Terrell Davis getting in, you know, who's four great years and then he got a knee injury. Like, he's in, he's a Hall of Famer. I would say, to me, the biggest lock in this class should be, it's probably Eli, but it should be Luke Kuechly, in my opinion, who I think fits that sort of description that I just had of Terrell Davis in a way. Like, Luke Kuechly didn't leave the game because of injuries that we know of, but he was in the league for, what, like 7 years, and he was a first-team All-Pro practically every year. He was the best inside linebacker in football for like a 6 year period.
Yeah.
He should be the biggest lock, in my opinion.
Kuechly is a slam dunk. Suggs is way up there on the career sacks list. So is Jared Allen. He's been up for about 5 years or so. But
yeah,
I think Jared Allen was a little bit, there's a little bit of Mark Gastineau to his game, I think, in some ways. Not as much substance as a guy like Terrell Suggs.
Yeah, I think, too, when you play for, like, five different teams like he did, you know, like, there is something when you look at these guys and you go, oh, yeah, Reggie Wayne was a Colt his whole career. There's some sort of charm about a guy being with one team his whole career.
You know, the interesting thing about Fred Taylor is that everybody above him in the career rushing yardage
is in.
Everybody that's above him is, except for that's eligible, is in. Frank Gore's not in, but he's not eligible yet.
Adrian
Peterson, who's not, he's gonna
lock.
Make it.
He's a lock. That's why I've always looked at Fred Taylor, was like, he's the, because I think Gore gets in like the ultimate compiler, but I think he gets in. Yeah, Fred Taylor, man, good player. Obviously, he's a Hall of Fame finalist. All right, those are your headlines from the weekend.
Boy, okay. Never mind. We'll go ahead. I just look at the guy above him. Like, Thurman Thomas and Fred Taylor played the exact same number of years.
Yeah.
And yet, it's because Thurman Thomas obviously was on really good teams and had, it's just, it's a different story.
Yep.